Yeah.
Okay, welcome again, everyone. Our next presenter is Dr. Donald Tramer, who is going to talk from the Department of Biology, who's going to talk to us about his use of the clickers in the classroom, but who is also going to talk about the importance of rethinking how you teach, your teaching style, when you're using active learning techniques and technology. Dr. Tramer?
Okay. Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming, and hope you don't miss too much of your lunch to attend this. So my talk is about using clickers in an upper level classroom course. They were introduced to the university more to facilitate engagement in the lower level courses, but some of us have had experience now that said, well, maybe they'd work in upper level, so I tried it for the first time this year. So I'd like to start, though, by getting some sense of the audience familiarity with clickers. So maybe this is the first time you've used it. So basically what you do is you get the little clicker that was given to you and press the number that corresponds to the most appropriate answer in terms of your clicker experience. Actually, while you're clicking away, we've got 14. It looks like no more are coming in there. 15, okay, so we'll go ahead to the slide. And what we've got is, so most of you have heard about them and not used them very much, but maybe a third have used them fairly frequently. It looks like no one has used them in an upper level course. So let me get my... So for those of you that are in this category and you're interested, I might refer to them in ways that aren't fully accessible, but the university has a strong support program for teaching people how to use clickers with kind of workshops and instructions, and Adam there is involved in the program, and so there is good resources for that, and that was a very large help to me in starting out. For those of you that have used them fairly frequently but haven't considered trying them in an upper level course, then this lecture is a bit more geared to you, but perhaps those who haven't tried them can see how it could be used. So a little bit about the historical context. In 2005, I was finding increasing student dissatisfaction with my large core course of about 200 students in biology. I started to get the, Dr. Tramer is boring. Dr. Tramer thinks he's too smart to teach a course at this level. Dr. Tramer is uninterested. Why do we have to take this course? And so I escaped a little bit to a sabbatical, but it certainly was bugging me because I am a committed teacher and the students were perceiving things about me that didn't match at all my perception in the classroom. I thought I was being engaged and interesting and they found me boring, so something was wrong. So when I came back, I talked to Susan Cowan at the Teaching and Learning Services, and she listened to how I taught and said, well, maybe you're just talking at them a little too much. You're not actually engaging them. You're not finding out what they're learning. So I tried more interaction in the class at first, putting up slides to see if they understood a concept by applying it to a new situation in particular. And that's when then the university said, well, this clicker thing was going to come. They had an introductory lecture. They said if we'd looking for a few professors to try it. So I introduced it in a couple of lectures, and it was extremely popular. I found I could take to it quite well. It wasn't, you know, some little glitches, but it wasn't very hard to learn. And the students responded extremely well, and it really facilitated that interaction. So I was very pleased. So last year, I used it in all my lectures in the course, and my co-instructor used it in most of his. And we found the student response is very much turned around. Dr. Tramer is so enthusiastic. Dr. Tramer really clearly loves this subject, and I want to learn more about it, and so on. So really, it was a kind of a night and day experience, and it did make me rethink how I was teaching. So this year, I decided to try it in my Biology 307, which is a behavioral ecology course very close to my research specialty, I thought... The course already had a lot of strengths. I hadn't perceived student dissatisfaction, but I thought it would actually, it might help. So I'd use the basic style in teaching this course for a couple of decades, really. It's not a required course, so students are already interested. The class is capped at 50, so it's not too huge. The lecture room is well set up for discussion. It's long and wide, so you can get to the students all easily. And already there was some interaction. In some lectures, I would ask them to think about things and have a discussion. And in the conferences, a major theme of the course is critiquing the scientific literature. So I take the conferences myself and go through research papers with them, teaching them how to critique. So I have had a lot of contact. But most of my lectures actually considered of me talkie-talkie, and relatively few students participated in those classroom discussions. And on the basis of 205, I thought, well, at least by using clickers, I might get more people to be thinking about the material and sort of coming to terms with it instead of just waiting, you know, for the discussion to go on so that they could learn more stuff that was going to be on the test. So to kind of cut to the chase and say the kind of bottom line of this is that there's several things. So the first was that even though clickers require multiple choice answers in an anonymous way, the discussions that follow the clickers were much more engaged than before. So instead of two or three students in the front, you know, always answering the questions, students in the back, students in the middle, lots of hands would go up when I followed up with a clicker. So that was a surprise and a delight. I thought it might just, you know, people would use them anonymously and that would be it. I found that concepts that I've been teaching in the same way for a number of years and thought were very clear and very straightforward were often subject to significant misunderstanding, and there were some problems in something. So, you know, something I thought was easy enough for them to read and I just say it and they get it. They hadn't got it. And so that was an important revelation for me. And then I found that as I tried to think about ways to assess their knowledge of the concepts through an interaction, it actually changed my teaching. So I got more thinking about how do you see what they know instead of just telling them what you know. And often, you know, I made discoveries myself, even though it's my research field and I was very familiar with the topic, I found that it really did change me as well. And the level of, you know, enthusiasm, participation in the class was really notably different. Even though this is a popular course and students always like me in it and they like the teaching them to critique, they appreciate that effort. There was nevertheless a very positive change above that. So basically, I'm going to work you through a kind of an example to show how I do this. So students are told to read, usually there's lecture notes and sometimes a chapter in the text before the lecture. I briefly review that material in the lecture because I don't assume that all of them will have really read it, but I do it at a level that if they haven't read it, they'll know that for the next time they should. And then I'll introduce some new material. Since the course is about behavior, I can often use video, but sometimes it's an example or a quantitative problem. Then I'll use the clickers to explore the new material and then follow that with a discussion based on the responses to the clickers. So this example is going to be the topic of sexual selection, which is being contrasted to the field of natural selection, which I had previously covered. This is a fairly complex topic and has some subtle pitfalls in understanding. And don't worry if you're not familiar with the terms, that part's not going to be on your exam. So I start with something like a question: how could a trait detrimental to survival be favored by selection? And it could be if it favors reproduction to a greater extent than its cost to survival. Then I give the definitions of natural selection and sexual selection, so just so you have some understanding of the context, sexual selection means increases in reproductive success by success in obtaining mates, and a little bit of more subtle information, and then sort of four categories where how individuals could obtain mates more through sexual selection. So then I say, now I'm going to show a video, and I give the identifying material so they could get it from the library or something if they, because I post the PowerPoint as a PDF subsequently. Oops, excuse me. Discard that. And so, with showing video, there's always a little bit of a thing as your hand shake on the thing. Come on, Nero. Let's go. Okay.
Forests of the Hinds. Fights between males are among the most fun.
This will be 3 minutes, so relax through nature one, but pay attention because the questions will follow.
The capercaillie is the biggest of grouse. the arenas on which the males display are vigorously contested. And the best, in the end, is claimed by the most powerful male, who will defend it against any intruder.
You'll notice that the capercaillies use clickers, too.
He is so charged up with being the breeding season that he will display into almost anything, including me. No doubt. Oh. But here's a really serious rider. He is being very reckless indeed. Birds can get very badly injured in battles like these and even die from their wounds. But the rewards they're fighting for are very great. This is the most important moment of any year. The females tour the dueling grounds to select the bonniest fighter of them all. And they seem to agree on who the champion is.
Okay, so that's about what I would show. So I often can show sort of 2 or 3 minutes. Sometimes I'll show more extensive detail because I want them to get to see it's not just sort of video clips. It's sometimes watching behavior takes time. And so then I'll ask them to bring out their clickers and to think about identifying which traits they saw in that film might originate from natural selection versus sexual selection. So this is a clicker question from the class, but I guess I left the graph. So don't respond to this clicker question. There will be some use of clickers. So for example, I ask, does the red skin around the eye and the white beak and the black neck likely arise from natural or sexual selection? And it's easy to capture a frame from the video just to remind them what the film looked like there. I've got both the female and the male. So some said natural, but most said sexual selection, which was the expected answer. So I would normally discuss that, but I'll just move on to illustrate a couple others. So then I ask, what about the female's mottled brown feathers? And most say that's natural selection. And when you talk to them, they say so that she can hide when she's incubating the eggs. And then I ask about the male's aggressiveness, and you can, you know, to find the exact frame where Attenborough's falling over on his ass is really, it takes some time, but it actually is so addictive that you could end up capturing frames over and over again instead of getting on with your lecture plans. And so they see the aggressiveness mostly as sexual selection, but you can explore why some of them might not have. So here's a case where I might go into a little bit more detail. So I ask them, what about the shape of the beak? And then quite a few said that it was from natural selection, but quite a significant minority said sexual selection. So I said, well, so one of the things is that these are answered anonymously, at least in terms of the classroom, so you don't necessarily want to pinpoint. So you don't say, well, who thought it was sexual selection? You say, why would someone think that it might be natural selection? And then they feel freer to respond. And so someone said, well, the beak is for eating, and so it probably affects how they can pluck the leaves of the heather or feed on whatever they feed on. The students often wouldn't know. And so you say, yes, that makes sense. But then quite a few people said it was sexual selection, so why might it be sexual selection? And so then you get a student saying, well, I was looking at that, and I noticed that the male has, back. I guess it's because I reopened the PowerPoint. So let's see, I'll go back one more. So some say, you know, I noticed that the beak in the male is really hooked as compared to what looks like a simpler beak in the female. And so I think it's sort of so that they can fight better. And so you realize that the students are seeing a lot more than you thought you saw, and that's, of course, shared with the group. And it's also interesting that many of them have been watching nature videos for most of their life. These are biology students, and they're interested in behavior. And so to get them to be thinking about the concepts in the field instead of just sitting back and listening to a narrative really takes some effort. So when they're used to having a clicker session after a video session, they pay a lot more attention. So it's an extremely interesting that way. And this is just a summary of my, why I ask those questions. So there's a number of other ways that I was able to use it this year. Remember, at this level, it's the first time that I used it. So I teach a field called optimal foraging, which comes up with a series of equations to predict diet choices in animals. So I gave them a problem like this with some data and information and said, well, can they guess which, if you know, the squirrels had a patch full of shelled peanuts and another patch with the shells on, and here's how long it takes them to do. I've already introduced these components. Which do they think they take? And I let them talk to each other and interact with each other and get out their calculators and think about this. And so then I go on to a slide. So then I discuss which they think. And, oh, then I give a clicker question to ask which they think. And then I would have sort of go back to this slide and say, how did they come about that decision? What should, assumptions were they making and so on? And I actually go back and forth. So I had two or three. I think maybe I have a slide. So I can interact using a combination of clickers and then this sort of how they solved the problem, what assumptions they made, the logical framework of the theory. And then I actually showed them, well, they're often intimidated by this quantitative approach. And then I say, but they've actually solved an optimal foraging now, kind of empirically, and now let's go into a more stronger theoretical framework for this. So I put in the other slides. If some of you are interested, I'll be at the demonstrator table in the first half of the afternoon, and I can talk to you after lunch. So there are other applications. You can find out what their background is. You can get feedback on changes. That's what Dr. Hassan was talking about before. You can find out if they have read the text. So this was a case. Another change I made this year was that for these conference articles, I put online quizzes asking medium-level questions about the article to encourage them to read it before the conferences. And that also, just by the way, made a huge difference. But I was wondering if they were finding that a drag. The conferences are optional, so I don't take attendance or anything. They're learning skills that are tested, but I don't test what they do there. And so, as you can see, a large number found them extremely useful, and that's more than I had thought. You can set the technology to anonymous, so when you want to do a survey where they think you might be checking, you can do it either so that their clicker number is recorded to see if they've participated in the class later, or that it's not recorded, and they can see you doing that, so they know when you're doing it anonymously or not. So then, because this critiquing was an important thing, and it's not a prerequisite, I expected I was going to be teaching this, but I wanted to know what their background was, so I asked how much experience they had with critiquing research papers, and then found that most had none or extremely little. And so that's what I had thought, but I wasn't sure at all what the situation was. And then I wanted to know how much experience they had in watching behavior. So could I talk about these experiences, or should I assume that they were the way so many of our students these days are, so urban and don't have much experience? But unlike previous years, I found many either had pets that they paid a lot of attention to or had watched animals in nature quite a bit. And then I asked a question about the textbook. This wasn't a very difficult question if they had read the chapter that preceded this lecture, but if they hadn't, it wouldn't be. They'd have to make a guess, and they would probably guess wrong, and that's what happened. So a bit of encouragement to read the text. It's relevant. And you can add these little check marks to show what the right answer is. Okay, so now if you'll get your clickers out, I want to actually have a little bit of a discussion with clickers about why you think clickers that promote multiple choice questions with anonymous answers have the somewhat counterintuitive effect of actually promoting a discussion where people sort of present and stand behind their own ideas. So you can choose more, in this case, you can choose more than one answer. The default is that students can only choose one answer, but you can set it so multiple answers are allowed. So please click the number that corresponds to whichever explanations you think are appropriate here. Okay, we've got up to 22 responses. Looks like the popcorn stopped popping, so we'll go and see what the graph is. Okay, so a lot of you think that it forces students to commit to a position or it improves their self-confidence. A few think it's very unlikely, and some have some other explanations. So does anyone have any, what do you think, let's look at the others, you know, besides those first two, what other possible reasons might someone think why these anonymous multiple choice questions would promote the follow-up discussion? Yeah.
I just wonder, seeing where the staff stands or the chair stands,
can you have baseline of which dimension? Yes, I think that, so that actually is important, and that's actually what I was thinking about in the, it improves self-confidence, because I actually engaged the class in a discussion about this very issue, and I said to them, why do we seem to be discussing more? And they said, it's because the clickers are anonymous. And I said, but you're speaking up, and I know who's speaking, and all your peers did. And they said, yes, but if you'd made a choice that you were afraid you were the only one or you had failed to understand, and then you see, even if you're not the majority, if you see that even a minority of the class has had a similar choice, it gives you the confidence that then you can speak to that position. And that apparently that's hugely, I was kind of like one of these talky guys with the hand up in the class, and so it was only when I met my wife and she told me what the rest of the class, how the rest of the class saw the world and the professor, that I started to realize that sort of the potential loss of face is hugely important. But once you see that you're not alone, you have a chance. And so they said that that was very important, and I got that feedback. So any others?
No, I was just
Yeah, so it's amazing. So this is, well, 300 level, I guess you'd probably say middle level, but still, yes, maybe even more, maybe because they're really starting to engage in the topic, and if you don't understand what sexual and natural selection are, maybe it's actually worse because you're with a bunch of peers who are also really interested in that topic. It seemed to be really, really an issue. Does anyone have any suggestions in the others? No? Okay, so... And although not too many of the students said this, I think quite a few people as experienced professors here see this, I think that the committing to a position is also an important issue. So it's easy if you have a classroom discussion just for some students to sit back and wait until it's over and then get on with the lecture. But if they have a clicker and they have to decide, is it sexual selection or natural selection or don't know, or will they choose patch one or patch two, or not enough information was given to solve this problem, then they have already kind of engaged with the process. And I think then when you give them a chance to discuss it, they kind of have a position. It's not like a debating society where they have to totally defend it, but they've actually thought about it enough to have a position, and then I think it promotes a much greater greater interaction. So those two are interesting. Now, it doesn't have to be the person that clicked unlikely, so I won't single anyone out. Does anyone have an idea why they think it maybe is something peculiar about this course or this situation and isn't so general? Okay, so sometimes students at the 200 level tell me they click the wrong button or they want to make sure their clicker gets counted, so they'll click anything and then change it if they have enough time. So maybe someone wants to tell me individually about why it's unlikely or keep it to themselves. But okay, so here's another clicker question then. Do you think that the promotion of discussion using clickers only will happen in courses like behavior or cinema or something where you can have video or where you have simple quantitative problems? Is that something, or do you think it's more general? Have you been holding up signs for me that I haven't even seen? Okay. And that's going to be the 5 or the 10-minute one? Oh, well, okay. Okay, so we'll go ahead and see what people think. So many of you say not necessarily, and that's what I also think, and that's the right answer from my perspective. So what I'd like to say before we get into a more general discussion is that my final, there's my 10-minute call, we'll have a chance to discuss. So I think it's important to encourage the students to do their reading ahead of time so you don't feel like these extended classroom discussions are reducing the content of the course, and so the students don't feel that either. It's important to focus on the challenging concepts that they might not so easily gain, but you might be surprised, as I was, that some concepts that seem so straightforward if you've studied a field for 15 years aren't necessarily, could be challenging concepts to the students. And unlike multiple choice tests, clicker questions that don't necessarily have a single clear right answer are better because they promote discussion. So in a multiple choice test, it just drives you crazy. The students put these challenges and you say, oh my God, I didn't realize that that was that, that you know, that I should have clarified that distinction. But here, I mean, the natural selection and sexual selection, those two are partially overlapping concepts, and traits might have aspects of both. So it's not as though there was only one right answer to those questions. It's more to see if the students are thinking in the right way so that if they talk about a process, that they've got the right process involved. So very often, clicker questions work better for discussion if they're a little bit ambiguous or more inclusive or partially overlap, and then you can see. I think it's a very bad idea to use clickers to force attendance. Students tell me that, too, not because I've done it, but when I've asked them how the clickers are working here, they say in other courses if it's just to take attendance, it isn't good. And it's important to leave time for discussion. So that's another thing in the feedback sessions, that when I talked about the students, they say, well, clickers are used in more of our courses now, but sometimes the professor just says the right answer, and that's the right answer, and we don't have a chance to discuss it. And so that's why I did on this slide, I did just that, to give you a little bit of a subjective feeling of what it feels like when the professor says, yeah, that's the answer, let's go on to a further discussion, as compared to the earlier question, where I said, here's some discussion, and I had space for other, and let's get people's opinions. It gives you a much stronger feeling of engagement to have had some interaction and heard what other people think than it does just to know that that's what the professor thinks is the right answer, and then just to go on. Sorry, I already did that. So I'm trying to think of a better metaphor, but I didn't want to get sex and marriage and things. And so I'll say, clickers without a discussion are really missing something. It's like reading the menu and not having the dinner, or it's like doing the research and not having the thought involved in the publication. And so it really is important to allow that. So what's going to happen in the future? I think there might even be a role for clickers even in more higher level courses. Like if you had a seminar class with 20 students, it's a way to engage them, even the ones who might not speak. It might actually work in that situation. I've twice now brought a clicker set from audiovisual when I was invited to give a research seminar, once at UCAM and once at Concordia, handed out clickers to the audience, and actually got them to respond. Again, it was a little bit easy in the sense that I was talking about my field of behavior, which is vigilance, and I had some slides, and they had to try to recognize a predator in films, in still slides. But it actually worked in a professional seminar to engage the audience and get them involved, and actually spread the word about clickers a little bit to a number of people who hadn't had prior experience with them. And I'm going to try. I'm invited for a plenary lecture this summer, and I'm actually going. It should be only about 100 people. So, and it's here in town. So, I'm going to try to see if I can find a way at that kind of professional level to bring clickers into a kind of research seminar context. And maybe if we do some of that, some of us will doze a little less and be engaged a little bit more in research seminars. So, I hope you haven't dozed too much. I'll end the show here. This is just sort of, just going on to the other slides that I could could show some of you if you wanted to see a little bit more about the problem. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer what I could.
You were talking about it at different levels, different class levels. Do you notice with different class sizes changes in there, or significant difference between the interaction in terms of discussion, or do you use it in larger classes?
So in the class of 200, that's in a big raked lecture hall. It's Adams Auditorium. And I can wear a portable mic like this and walk around, but there isn't time to really have discussion with all the students or with some. But so what I typically do there is I'll show a slide. So one of the goals in that course is to get the students used to looking at data on slides. So I'll present a concept, probably one graph, then I'll show an unfamiliar graph and give them some time to talk and think about it, and then ask their answer. And usually there's quite a diversity of answers. So then I might walk up the aisle and ask a few people why they think someone might have chosen one answer or the other, and then answer. But I don't really have a full discussion. In the behavioral ecology class, a greater proportion of the class can be engaged, but also because it's not a required course, you know, more of them may be mentally engaged already, so there's a kind of a class size interest level issue already there. More can do it, but still, I mean, almost any slide could generate a discussion that could go on the whole lecture, and so it's always a delicate balance between hearing enough opinions that you can give some feedback and get a variety of opinions and see if the learning exercise has been there and not let it kind of, you know, get too extended to other areas or continue on. And sometimes I'll have the same issue in another sequence. So in that natural and sexual selection one, what I did, I had another sequence, a very different species, kind of nest building where the female checks the male's nests and the females were kind of brightly colored but not the same color as the male. So I actually showed that video and then sort of went through it again, and that sort of is a way to say, are they getting it or not? In the big class, sometimes I'll show another slide, and I often find after you show one and then you explain a misunderstanding, then the next time they'll get that, and they actually feel a lot better about it too if they've misunderstood. Too long an answer, did it? You can see why discussions can be a problem in my classes.
It's not the class.
Yeah, right. That's an issue. It is with me. So that get close enough to answer.
Yeah.
Other questions? Okay, no time for questions anyway. So now Adam has a question. Oh, Adam said.
Just one question is that this past year we had over 6,000 students across the university using Quikr in their classes, and every range from 20 students to 650. Those that are interested in using it in the fall or next year, come either go to the TLS website and you'll see information there on it, or come talk to myself or Epi Kouakis from TLS sometime today. We'll be happy to talk to you more about it. And thanks to John, you've obviously had some great impact.
Yeah, well, it was good impact for me, too. Don't forget to return your clickers.